It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
When you look at the entire food movement, there are so many things to get excited about, but few are more interesting to me right now than the trend to how we solve issues and what's available to us to eat. There are some very exciting projects in this, and I have a chance to visit today with Catherine Couch, and Catherine is the founder, the executive director of the Ceres Community Project, and they have a special medically tailored meal project that has a lot of things to be encouraged about. Catherine, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you so much, Roger. It's really a pleasure to be with you today, and I'm excited to explore this topic.
Well, let's explain this topic. When you describe it as a medically tailored meal pilot project, what is that exactly?
So the really exciting piece here is that the state of California has just this week approved a three-year, $6 million pilot project that is going to involve six organizations across the state, all of whom have a good long history of providing high-quality meals that are basically tailored to the nutritional needs of people with illness. So that's what we mean when we say medically tailored. A medically tailored meal and a medically tailored meal intervention is a meal that has been designed and approved by a registered dietitian to meet the specific medical needs of a patient with an illness like cancer or heart disease or diabetes. The intervention involves a nutritional assessment of the patient, the providing of these meals for a certain period of time, and ongoing nutritional consulting. And so the idea is that we improve the nutritional status of these patients, and therefore we improve their body's ability to deal with the illness, the side effects of the illness, to maintain adherence to medication and so forth. And all of that translates to things like less hospitalizations, fewer emergency room visits, and that in turn leads to healthcare cost savings. And so what we're trying to demonstrate is that by investing in food and high quality food, we can not only improve the quality of life of these patients, we can improve their health outcomes, but most importantly, at least for the state, is that we can save healthcare costs.
So, you know, taking a rough number, that means, like, for example, if you could say there might be $5,000 worth of food that somebody might get, but that would save $10,000 worth of medical bills. And again, I'm pulling funny numbers here, but is there
yes,
that sort of look at the difference between eating right and saving costs in medicine or surgery or whatever might come from those medical events?
It is, and you know, we're building on some work that other organizations have done. So Ceres Community Project and the organizations in California that are part of this pilot are part of a national coalition of nutritional food service providers called the Food as Medicine Coalition. And among that group, there have been some small studies that have been done. And we built our analysis in California on a study that was done by an organization in Philadelphia called MANA. And they did a study with their Medicaid Managed Care Organization, which is their local provider of Medicaid services. And what they showed is that when people had, I think that they provided meals for 6 months, they saw across a whole number of different diseases a 28 to 32% reduction in healthcare costs. So if you translate that, so what we did in building our analysis for California is we assumed only a 20% reduction in healthcare costs. What that translates it to is the $6 million investment that the state is going to be making over the next 3 years will save an estimated $13.8 million in healthcare costs. So a net savings of almost $8 million after the investment's made. And this is what's the really exciting piece, and I think the really cutting edge piece is there's been a lot of research around food insecurity and health around malnutrition, you know, especially with cancer patients and health outcomes and healthcare costs. But this is giving us an opportunity at a pretty big scale across seven different counties in California to actually, you know, dial in and measure the specific cost savings for a big system like Medi-Cal when we provide high-quality food as part of treatment.
Now, Medi-Cal is Medicaid in California, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So all these states that are affiliated with the Food is Medicine Coalition, they've got whatever their own Medi-Cal.
So it's Medicaid. Medicaid. You know, it gets confusing because California calls it Medi-Cal. But, yeah, this is the Medicaid program. So this is, you know, as we've been hearing with all of the conversations about the Senate health care bill, Medicaid is the largest insurer in the country. Medicaid is the insurance provider for, I know, something like 49% of children in the United States. And it covers people who are up to 138% of the federal poverty level. So the population we're serving is both poor and sick and has the least ability to access high-quality food of anyone.
When you look at the poverty levels, is it California has a higher cost of living than, say, some states do. But is the poverty level the same across the country, or does it vary from state to state of what they determine to be the poverty level?
I'm not an expert on this one. I do believe it varies. What I know is that in California, 200% of the federal poverty level is the equivalent of $32,000 a year for two people.
What might be an example of what they would get from being in this program, you know, down to an individual or a household? What would that look like?
We haven't completely designed what the intervention is going to be, and you know, that's a funny thing to say at this point, given that we've had this funding allocated. So we're in conversation with Department of Healthcare Services, which oversees Medi-Cal in California, about the specifics of how the pilot's going to be implemented. And one of the big questions in our field is, what is the duration, the length of service, and the intensity of service, the amount of someone's nutrition that you need to provide in order to see these benefits, right? So among our colleagues around the country, there's a pretty wide range of the amount of nutrition that people provide. Ceres, for example, provides on the lower end of that. So every week we give our clients four complete dinners for everyone in their family, a soup, a salad that can be used for lunch, and one serving of a healthy dessert. That goes all the way up to some of our colleagues provide 100% of people's nutrition, so 21 meals a week. And we're pretty sure you don't need to provide 21 meals in order to see the benefit. And Ceres certainly has really good program evaluation data showing that we're seeing good benefits and good outcomes from what we provide. So we're in the conversation right now about what the intervention will look like, and you know, it's most likely going to be somewhere around 14 meals a week that we'll be providing, and we may even be looking at something where, for example, someone being discharged from the hospital with congestive heart failure may get most of their nutrition for a period of time, and it may scale down over time. Those are some of the questions that we're going to be answering between now and January 1st, when the pilot will actually start.
So the meals that you're providing now, for example, do they come like in each meal? Is it kind of packaged in a to-go container that are delivered to the household that they can put in the microwave and warm it up, have a meal?
Yes. So we do these four complete dinners, like I said, and so each of those is a healthy plate. So a 4 ounce or so serving of a protein and a couple of side dishes, including, you know, plenty of fresh vegetables. And, you know, part of our work here is, you know, when people are ill, there's a greater openness, we might say, to improving eating habits. People realize that, you know, there's something really at stake, and they understand that how they eat makes a difference for their health. And so part of what we do at Ceres is we're really working to use the opportunity of illness to educate people about what a healthy diet looks like, what it tastes like, and the fact that they feel better when they eat this way. And our clients, our research shows that our clients make and sustain pretty significant changes in their eating habits as a result of the intervention, completely separately from the improvement in quality of life and health outcomes and healthcare cost savings. So it's really important, I think, to say that these meals are very high quality, made from scratch with whole foods. Ceres uses 100% organic food. That's not true across all of our colleagues, but we really believe in that. We believe in the impact that has beyond our own clients in terms of food justice and farm worker health and our long-term ability to feed ourselves. But these are whole food meals made from scratch, lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, and again, designed to meet the nutritional needs of the population that we're serving.
So if there's somebody who has cancer and is under treatments for cancer, they're going to end up having different meals possibly than somebody that's diabetic.
Yes, and you know, the bottom line is pretty similar across, if you look at heart disease, diabetes, cancer, those in particular, you know, you're looking at a whole foods diet with high quality proteins, whole grains, and lots of fresh fruits and vegetables. On the heart disease side, and for us, we think we do a similar meal for heart disease and cancer. We're limiting sodium, right? Mm-hmm. And saturated fats and unhealthy fats, which we do anyway. And then for diabetics, you're managing carbohydrates. And so, for example, in many of our vegetarian entrees, we need to adjust what the side dishes are to make sure that the meal is not too carb heavy for the diabetic population. But the basics are very, very similar across all of those. I mean, we know that, you know, what's making us sick as a population is fast food, processed food, sugar, refined grains, and what is going to make us healthier is whole foods, whole grains, fresh fruits and vegetables. You know, there's some interesting quick stats that I'll share. 60% of deaths in the U.S. now have poor diet as a contributing cause. So we're basically eating ourselves sick. We know that when people eat at least 7 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, they reduce their overall mortality by 40%. You know, I like to say it's hard to find a pharmaceutical that will do that for you. And yet only, a very small proportion of Americans are eating even the minimum recommendation of 5 servings a day. So we have this tremendous gap between what we know a healthy diet looks like and the number of people who are actually doing that.
Well, and imagine a lot of people realize that broccoli is better for them than French fries. But maybe they're not preparing them, or they can't afford it. I mean, the cheapest food that there is you can go through the drive-thru window sometime and still get dollar specials loaded with saturated fat and grease, and it's not balanced. And I would imagine most people that are purchasing it realize it. But it's either time or money or maybe knowledge on how to prepare these dishes that's keeping them from eating a better diet, don't you think?
I agree. It's you start with knowledge, skill, inspiration, and then you have to add affordability and time, all of those things. And, you know, the more that we can get people to understand that there are simple and cost-effective ways to eat well, and that cooking actually doesn't take as much time as people think, the more we can move the dial on this. And access is a huge piece. And I think, you know, the really exciting, you know, piece about this pilot is that we want to end up with results that are statistically significant and can be extrapolated beyond this population. We want to be able to go not only back to the legislature in California and be able to make a case for making this policy, but we want to be able to go to other states, as you said, and other Medicaid providers, and have them look at the results and say, "Wow, we should be reimbursing for food for this population." But we also want to be able to go to private insurers, and because we, you know, all of us who have been doing this work for Ceres for 10 years, many of our colleagues for 30 years, we have seen over and over again the benefit in terms of quality of life and health outcomes for the patients we serve, but just as importantly, the opportunity to educate them and get them excited about eating well. Our clients tell us over and over again, oh my gosh, I feel so much better when I eat this way. And they become committed. So it's both an investment, you know, this if we were to provide high quality meals as a part of the standard of care for these patients, it's not only an investment in their quality of life, their health outcomes, and healthcare cost savings, it's an investment in their long-term health and potentially the health of their children as well, because if we get the whole family to change their eating habits, then there's going to be generational benefits of that. So there's a short-term benefit, and then there's also a really important long-term benefit in terms of educating and changing eating habits.
You know, I think there are some pilot projects around the country that are giving credits at farmers markets, too, for people to purchase more, you know, fruits and vegetables from farmers markets. And but then they have to prepare it. They have to know how to prepare whatever they're purchasing at some sort of discounted rate or whatever that particular program is. Where you really are talking about with this upcoming program of actually giving them meals, not...
Right.
Not a box full, like a CSA box full of
right.
fresh produce they have to figure out what to do with.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the really important work that's being done with what's called market match programs.
Yes.
Where, and now, under the current farm bill, U.S. Department of Agriculture has a whole funding stream for what they're calling food and nutrition incentive programs. And those are programs where you know, again, primarily Medicaid-eligible patients or people have the access to ability to go to a farmer's market, use their food stamp benefits, and get double for them. So I spend $10 at the market, I get $20 worth of produce. And there's also, you know, quite a bit of work and interesting programs. For example, Cooking Matters is an organization that's operating in many states now, and they do a cooking program, teaching people to cook. And they have a program for adults and families, for teenagers, and for younger children as well. And there's many, many efforts like that, right, to bring back cooking, to connect people either through community gardens or market match programs to fresh fruits and vegetables, and then adding in the skill piece. And, you know, I think we've done, you know, we have realized over the last couple of years that so many of our low-income clients do get very excited about continuing to eat well, and we know that once the you know our work ends and their meal delivery ends, that you know they're still having to navigate a food system that's really quite unaffordable for them. And we've been doing some work. We're just finishing the second year of a pilot study with University of San Francisco's Public Health Department, where we're testing some different kind of transition support strategies, you might say. One of them is once the meal delivery ends, clients can get 8 weeks of delivered fresh vegetables along with recipes and a menu plan. We're also testing 3 nutrition and cooking classes and then the combination of the classes plus the veggie boxes to see what we can learn about what's missing for people in being able to continue eating well and how some different kinds of transition support might be helpful in allowing them to make the transition to cooking for themselves, building the habit of that, and also around the affordability piece. We have some USDA grants out right now that would allow us to do some market match things and some, you know, delivered CSA boxes that our clients would partially pay for along with an incentive program.
Well, Catherine, with this direction, I don't know if we're calling it a movement yet or not, but it seems like it's a food is medicine movement, and hopefully it continues to get momentum. But if you identify somebody that has an issue that's within the quadrant, they're making less than $30,000, in the household, I guess, or they've got some disease and they have these special needs, do you give the meals to everybody that lives in that household or just provide the meals for the person that is ill?
We give them to everyone in the family. And there's a couple, I think, really important reasons. The first one is in a family where there's a really serious illness, there is an enormous amount of stress on everyone. And the capacity of a family to sit down to a meal together helps to relieve some of that stress. And again, if you're only feeding the client, someone else still has to cook and feed the rest of the family. The second one is we want there to be that moment of normalcy, right, where the family gets to eat a meal together. We don't want the client to feel isolated, like they have this special diet and everyone else gets to eat something else. But the big reason is our goal is to change that client's eating habit. 75% of our clients are women. So if you improve the eating habits and you get that mom in that family excited and willing to keep eating well, and you haven't brought the whole family along on that journey, her ability is good. She is not going to be able to be successful. So it's really about making a change in the whole family and helping them together learn about healthy eating and get on board for a new way of going forward.
Well, I think it's really exciting, and that this is happening across the country, and I guess not in every state yet, but still that it's happening in many places across the country. This is, seems like a really positive development. What does it look like? What's the timetable?
Our plan is, along with Department of Healthcare Services, is to start the pilot January 1, 2018. So we'll be in the pilot phase 2018, 2019, 2020, and then there will obviously be data analysis and so forth. And you know, I suspect that we will have initial results earlier than that, and we will be continuing to educate our legislators here in California about what we're seeing. And then the goal is to come back in, you know, 2021. It feels like such a long way away. In 2021, and to be working with the legislature in California to make this policy in California. So what that means is that we would write into our Medi-Cal Medicaid statute that meal reimbursement for certain illnesses where it makes a difference is considered what's called an essential health benefit, and therefore the meals would be reimbursed by Medi-Cal as part of the standard of care. That allows the organizations like Ceres that are doing this work to scale up and to be able to serve many more people than we can serve now, because there will be a funding stream to pay for those meals. And instead of right now, you know, for Ceres, for example, 100% of our fundraising comes from individuals and foundations and corporations. We have no government funding. So having a funding stream allows us to scale and to grow capacity, and therefore to reach many more people.
Well, all the way from the farm level, you know, I can see where this has benefits. I mean, for the people raising this kind of food, that's going to be good for them too, because it's people are going to be improving their diet, and they're going to be able to grow food for that need, and actually taxpayers as well, because you're talking about a population that's going to be covered by the medical costs. Anyway, they're within in this category, and that by putting the money into food, you're holding down what money would ultimately have to be into medical services and prescriptions and so forth. And you've got the evidence to show that that works. So it sounds to me like it's hard to find fault with it, I would think.
Well, that's what we hope. That's what we're hoping to prove. So many of the conversations that I've had over the last few years and even over the last few months, everyone gets it. You know, everyone's like, well, of course that makes sense. If people are eating better, they're going to feel better and they're going to do better. But if you're going to make policy change, and if you want to get private health insurers on board to invest in this, they have to see the data. And so what's so exciting here is, you know, it's hard to find a private funder that will put $6 million behind a project. That's why, you know, our states and our federal government are so important, that they have the capacity to make these kind of investments. And what we're really hoping is we'll come out, you know, in 3 years, really having strong evidence that this is both right and effective and cost effective. And really, you know, our goal is to springboard this into widespread policy change around including food and medically tailored meals within the healthcare context, because we know that, again, people do better, they feel better, they do better, and it's cost-effective to do so.
Well, Catherine, these times have put a lot of pressure on programs and government programs, and just in wrapping up, I just want to ask you, though, why do you feel optimistic that what you've just described has a very good chance of succeeding in the next few years?
I mean, to be honest, Roger, the reason I feel most optimistic is because we are seeing such an epidemic of chronic disease in our country, and it's putting tremendous pressure on healthcare costs. And all of us who are in this field know that if we invest in food, we save money. And it's going to come down to, I think, you know, for insurers, it's going to come down to a dollars and cents approach. And if we can show that investing in food saves money, then there's going to be every reason for both public and private insurers to run, you know, to the bandwagon, basically, because so much of healthcare is so expensive, and it's becoming more so. If we can provide meals to someone for a year for the cost of one day in a hospital.
Wow. Just in wrapping up, if people have listened to this podcast and they want to know, track this project, if they want to know what's going on with Food as the Medicine Coalition around the country, or where do you suggest they look?
Well, I'll give you our website, which is www.ceresproject.org, and we will certainly be reporting on the project in our monthly newsletter and so forth. I would also say if you're on Twitter, you can follow at Ceres Community or at FIM Coalition, which is the National Food as Medicine Coalition Twitter handle, and we will be reporting fairly often about the project there as well.
Well, it's exciting, and you're busy on making this happen, and I appreciate your taking the time to be with us on Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks so much, Roger. It was my pleasure.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.